This paper has been slightly modified to optimize your listening experience. While we have included a brief description of the figures and tables, all references, citations, appendices, acknowledgments, footnotes, and endnotes have been removed. To obtain the tables, figures, appendices, full references and citations for this paper, please view the HTML or PDF version. March 2011. International Review of Research in Open and Distance Learning. Special Issue, Connectivism, Design and Delivery of Social Network Learning. The title of this article is Emergent Learning and Learning Ecologies in Web 2.0. The authors are Roy Williams, University of Portsmouth, UK. Regina Carousu, Independent Educational Researcher, UK. Jenny Magnus, Independent Education Consultant, UK. Abstract. This paper describes emergent learning and situates it within learning networks and systems and the broader learning ecology of Web 2. It describes the nature of emergence and emergent learning and the conditions that enable emergent, self-organized learning to occur and to flourish. More specifically, it explores whether emergent learning can be validated and self-correcting and whether it is possible to link or integrate emergent and prescribed learning. It draws on complexity theory, communities of practice, and the notion of connectivism to develop some of the foundations for an analytic framework for enabling and managing emergent learning and networks in which agents and systems co-evolve. It then examines specific cases of learning to test and further develop the analytic framework. The paper argues that although social networking media increase the potential range and scope for emergent learning exponentially, considerable effort is required to ensure an effective balance between openness and constraint. It is possible to manage the relationship between prescriptive and emergent learning, both of which need to be part of an integrated learning ecology. Introduction. The past decade has seen an exponential increase in the development and use of technologies for interaction and communication across almost all aspects of day-to-day events, at least in the developed world, from learning to work contexts to personal use. The number of blogs, emails, texts, and tweets has gone from zero to numbers in the billions in just a few years. Such innovations have not escaped the attention of higher education, for example, Sharp, Beetham, and DeFreitas and the related Higher Education Funding Council for England, HEFCE, paper, which states, as a result of the pervasiveness of technology, the term e-learning has come under scrutiny. Personal ownership of technologies coupled with access to social software means that all kinds of learning-related activity can potentially be e-enabled. E-learning can no longer be viewed as a purely institutionally based or narrowly defined set of activities, yet technology-enhanced learning remains a source of concern for institutions and suggests a need to understand better how to design and support learning involving technology. Access, especially to the Internet and social software, may have increased, but this does not mean that technology is always used to its best advantage either by teachers or learners. Specifically, DeFreitas and Connell write that the main challenge lies in the real transition to a less tutor-led approach to learning. Content will not be delivered to learners but co-constructed with them. This resonates with the notion of emergent learning as learning in which actor and system co-evolve. The expanded range of teaching and learning possibilities, such as e-books, e-journals, the incorporation of blogs and wikis into standard virtual learning environments, VLEs, Skype, virtual conferencing, and recently, Twitter, seems to have been welcome, and many university marketing departments are actively promoting their Web2 profile in the marketplace for student recruitment. However, their practice is still substantially shaped by traditional teaching modes, prescriptive learning outcomes, normative expectations, and conventional hierarchies. Unless institutions, both in education and at work, broaden their learning spaces to allow for greater flexibility and more self-organization, they might fail to address the possibly growing dilemma that even when students are in school, much of their education happens outside. Most students embrace the digitalized world of social networking, although this does not necessarily transfer to learning. Some students prefer to keep their social networking and their learning quite separate and resent intrusions into their mobile phone space by universities. On the other hand, because the use of mobile phones among students is very high, In some countries where computer broadband access may be difficult, such as South Africa, students are increasingly using mobile phones to access learning materials on the Internet. Both these examples illustrate how students are taking more control of their learning, with the result that many currently perceived novices are actually becoming silent experts in how, where, and by whom they want to be educated. This raises important questions about how institutions and individuals can manage and learn from what these silent experts can bring into the learning community. In addition, graduates living in a learning society are required to demonstrate a much greater level of autonomy and self-organization than 15 years ago. In this paper, we argue that it might be useful for educational institutions to actively explore alternative frameworks such as connectivism, complexity theory, communities of practice, and the underlying threads of emergent learning, to inform their planning and strategy. We will attempt to bring together elements of all these areas of research and practice, to develop a framework for emergent learning that can be applied across education, work, and social networking, with their increasingly blurred boundaries. Emergence has been discussed and defined by a number of authors, such as Sillars, Goldstein and, at the international systems level, Norsatina. For the purposes of this paper, we interpret emergent learning as learning which arises out of the interaction between a number of people and resources, in which the learners organize and determine both the process and to some extent the learning destinations, both of which are unpredictable. The interaction is in many senses self-organized, but it nevertheless requires some constraint and structure. It may include virtual or physical networks, or both. The debate on networks, connectivism, learner autonomy, and even emergence often has normative overtones, as if these things are an end in themselves. The implicit assumption is that if only everyone had the Internet, and everyone got connected to everyone else, learning would flourish. See, for instance, Downs, Siemens, Mitra and Dangwall, and Aurora's critique of Mitra, who she says has constructed a romance that tells of learning free from the chronic obstacles of formal schooling, and children liberated through self-learning. See also Magnus, Mac, Phi, and Williams and Mac, Phi, Williams, and Magnus for critiques of Downs and Siemens' CCK08 course. Selwyn argues the case for a more contextual, critical, and social scientific approach to the use of technologies in education. To achieve this, it might be useful to keep in mind that new technologies generally tend to increase discrepancies in power, at least initially, and that, as we argue throughout, connectivity is a necessary but not sufficient condition for learning. It is also important to note that learning which embraces emergence requires us to make decisions about values. Managing emergence is not an objective enterprise. Research approach and problem statement. This is a theoretical paper, drawing on the author's theoretical and empirical research. The paper explores the theoretical frameworks of complexity, communities of practice, and the notion of connectivism, using qualitative analysis and select cases to try to map out a more adequate framework for understanding emergence and its possible use in practice. The aim of the paper is to describe emergent learning and situate it within learning networks and the broader learning ecology of Web 2 and beyond. To do this, we need to explore the following. What are the conditions that enable emergent, self-organized learning to occur and to flourish? What mechanisms of validation are effective? Can emergent learning networks be self-correcting, and if so, how? Is it possible to link, or even integrate, emergent and prescribed learning, and if so, how? The distinction between emergent and prescribed learning needs to be unpacked in some detail, as it is crucial to the statement of the problem here. Collins and Halverson phrase this slightly differently. They talk instead of the affordances of digital media, as opposed to traditional modes of learning, but they share the same concerns, and they too stress the urgency of seeking a new and coherent model for the future of education. For the purposes of this paper, we need to be more specific than that, so we draw primarily on complexity theory, to map out the distinction between emergent and prescriptive learning. This provides us with an analytic framework with which to examine the conditions under which emergent learning might occur. Figure 1 shows the framework for emergent learning and learning ecologies. The figure can be viewed in a text version of this article. Following Snowden and Boone and Sillars, We can distinguish two different domains of application for learning, the domain of predictable events on the one hand, and on the other hand, the domain of complex adaptive events, which are not predictable because the agents are self-organizing. It is nevertheless possible to make sense, retrospectively, of complex events. In predictable domains, knowledge can be created and applied to provide control. The learning that is traditionally associated with predictable domains is typically organized hierarchically within centralized institutions. We will refer to it as prescriptive learning. A better term might be sutured learning, in the Lacanian sense of being sewn up and not negotiable, but for the sake of simplicity, we will stick with the more general term. Prescriptive learning, then, is based on knowledge which is predetermined for the learners, and duplicated and distributed at scale through traditional schools and universities, through print and other mass media, and through national quality assurance institutions. This covers most formal education in the UK, as well as most traditional publishing, educational broadcasting, and many VLEs. In complex adaptive domains, knowledge does not provide prospective predictability but rather, retrospective coherence. Hindsight does not provide foresight. The learning that is appropriate is self-organized and typically collaborative. It is open, and is created and distributed largely by the learners themselves. Examples include social software communities and networks, some personal learning environments, PLEs, and some communities of practice, COPs. On this basis, we can distinguish between two modes of learning, prescriptive learning systems and emergent learning networks, associated with the two domains of application, predictable and complex emergent respectively. This is not in itself new. Emergent and prescriptive learning have both always been with us. What has changed is a radical transformation of the modes of production of interaction, communication, and dissemination, collectively referred to as Web 2, which makes emergent behavior possible at an unprecedented scale, pace, and breadth of participation. Collins and Halvorsen point out that traditional modes of learning arose in response to the Industrial Revolution and were based on standardized mass production. The affordances of digital media, on the other hand, emerged out of the Information Revolution and the subsequent growth of Web 2 social software and learner-directed technologies. This poses direct challenges to how formal education operationalizes learning. What seems to be emerging now is a third phase, in which the information age is overtaken by the interactive age, in which the emphasis is not so much on the transfer of data by individuals and institutions, in information and communication technology, ICT, but rather on interaction and collaboration within social networking. Note, in our framework, the two modes of learning and the two modes of application are presented here as quite separate for analytic clarity. But as soon as prescriptive learning is applied in a social context or explored at the doctoral level, emergent factors also come into play. One of the central problems for learning is how to ensure the validation of knowledge and self-correction of the system. Validation and self-correction within prescriptive learning systems is based on well-established principles of the scientific method and expert peer review, which successfully produces and disseminates objective intellectual capital. This is not to deny that ethical issues and dilemmas may arise from the application of these objective methods, such as in genetic engineering, but the mechanisms for generating and validating knowledge are well established. This is not the case for emergent learning. The growth and diversity of the modes of production for emergent social networks provide the necessary conditions for an exponential expansion of emergent learning, including openness, interaction, and self-organization at scale. However, other factors, such as constraints and values, also have to be taken into account. How is it possible, for instance, for the Internet to be used to establish the mistaken consensus of 50 million Americans that Obama is, actually a Muslim? Where and how did they learn this? Web 2 provides the necessary conditions for emergent social behavior to flourish, but this does not necessarily lead to knowledge or to emergent learning. This is one of the key problems that this paper addresses, but we first need to explore the broader issues of emergence, in the analytic framework section, and then return to the specifics of emergent learning. Analytic framework. Learning can be defined, broadly, as acquiring knowledge or the capacity for effective action. It therefore requires individual capacity and a social or institutional context in which to act. Learning has always included both prescriptive learning, which is fixed and predictable, and emergent learning, which is unpredictable and arises out of the interaction between the learners and their context. We will outline the conditions that promote emergent learning, and we will try to show how emergence potentially adds to the affordances for learning, but also brings with it requirements for monitoring and rapid response. We need to note that, in terms of complexity theory, emergence can be either positive or negative, depending on the perspective of the person and the social context concerned. Emergence may add value to one community but detract from the value of another. Negative emergence may also include rogue or feral individuals or even communities and institutions, such as the derivatives markets in the late 90s and Al-Qaeda, both of which Noor Sattina shows in detail to be clear examples of emergent networks. Emergent learning. We can now start to add some detail to the framework, specifically for managing emergent learning in a digital, networked world. Siemens describes emergence as an attribute exhibited by complex systems. The interactions of multiple agents at a local level can create or contribute to significant system-level change. When applied to learning, we can appeal to emergence as the outcome, understanding that arises from different agents interacting and producing unanticipated outcomes. Since emergent learning is unpredictable but retrospectively coherent, we cannot determine in advance what will happen, but we can make sense of it after the event. It's not disordered. The order's just not predictable. We can summarize this as follows. Emergent learning is likely to occur when many self-organizing agents interact frequently and openly, with considerable degrees of freedom, but within specific constraints. No individual can see the whole picture. Agents and system co-evolve. Why is it important? Emergent learning is open and flexible, so it is responsive to context and can adapt rapidly, particularly in a world in which careers, professions, identities, competencies, and roles, as well as interactive and communicative media, are rapidly changing. However, openness needs to be counterbalanced by constraint and inclusive values. If all these factors are present, emergent learning is possible, and even probable. If not, however, emergence can degenerate into isolated virtual ghettos, or echo chambers, self-perpetuating and self-reinforcing enclaves, which may reinforce prejudice rather than produce the wisdom of the crowd. Emergence is not a panacea, it is an option, and we will argue that it has to be situated within, and preferably integrated within, an overall, inclusive learning ecology, along with prescriptive learning, as and where appropriate. Managing emergence. Snowden and Boone, Snowden and Sillars provide detailed analyses of the necessary conditions for managing emergent learning. Snowden contrasts two approaches to management, safe-fail experiments as opposed to fail-safe management, in emergent or complex domains and unpredictable or ordered domains, respectively. Fail-safe management aims at ensuring compliance with predictable outcomes, whereas safe-fail experiments aim at encouraging interaction and self-organization, and enabling emergence and innovation, which is managed by a heightened awareness of changes in attractors, boundaries, and emergence. A system of negative constraints which determine what is not allowed to happen, rather than specifying what does have to happen. Continuous monitoring, response and recovery, good weak signal detection of outlier events, light touch response where possible, and quick and decisive intervention where necessary, including dampening negative emergence and accentuating positive emergence. An emphasis on resilience, that is allowing mistakes, but rapidly responding and recovering, rather than on robustness, which does not allow for mistakes or for learning from mistakes. Creatively using retrospective coherence rather than trying to force compliance and predictability where it might not be appropriate or even possible, particularly in performance targets. Designing for emergence. Wenger writes that designing for emergence can only be an intention. Learning will be emergent whether it is designed for or not. We cannot anticipate what will emerge. The design process should be interpreted more as an attitude, a set of principles, or a philosophical approach than a practice. The details of the design are not the issue, It is the interaction between the planned and the emergent that matters. This involves an iterative feedback/feed-forward loop, where one is continually affecting the other and adjusting accordingly. This suggests that the planning and design should be as emergent as the learning. Structure and constraint. Sillars specifies the dynamics between structure and complexity in some detail. The structure of a complex system enables it to behave in complex ways. If there is too little structure, that is many degrees of freedom, the system can behave more randomly, but not more functionally. The mere capacity of the system, that is the total amount of degrees of freedom available if the system was not structured in any way, does not serve as a meaningful indicator of the complexity of the system. Complex behavior is possible when the behavior of the system is constrained. On the other hand, a fully constrained system has no capacity for complex behavior either. In other words, both openness and constraints must be continuously monitored, managed, and balanced. Knowledge ecologies. Prescriptive and emergent learning have always occurred in education, work, and informal settings in some measure. The differences lie in the balances between prescriptive and emergent learning, the degree of formalization of learning, and the different levels of resources which each sector applies to them. Learners have always been self-organized to some extent, even if this was on the borders of institutional practices. What has changed is that learners not only have access to the affordances of individualized tools to construct personal learning environments, PLEs, but that these are increasingly embedded in social networks which are, in turn, emergent and self-organizing. These PLEs might therefore better be seen as personal learning ecologies or personal ecological niches or nodes. Nor Satina writes that many emergent practices simply outrun the capacity of prescriptive, Abelian structures. Global systems based on microstructural principles do not exhibit institutional structures but rather the asymmetries, unpredictabilities, and playfulness of complex, and dispersed, interaction patterns. In principle and in practice, we are rapidly moving into much broader knowledge ecologies which link many sites of learning and networks that include both prescriptive and emergent elements. We need a new language to describe and analyze the way in which emergent learning occurs in different settings, or how structure and agency co-evolve in complex systems. The interactive potential of Web2 provides unprecedented opportunities and affordances for emergent learning. However, enabling, resourcing, and managing a learning ecology which integrates prescriptive and emergent learning requires people who can work across these two very different systems that are based on quite different epistemologies. Applying the framework. A number of issues or themes will be explored to flesh out the analytic framework in more detail and test it against practice and research. Various theories, particularly complexity, affordances, and communities of practice, as well as the concept of connectivism, will be drawn upon to analyze these cases, to try to provide a better understanding of how we can enable and manage emergence in a digital, networked world. Validation and self-correction. Validation and self-correction within emergent learning networks remains an issue. Many academics still dismiss emergent learning and Web2 as peripheral or even irrelevant to real formal learning, because they see no mechanisms for validation and self-correction. Wikipedia provides a good example of emergent learning, based on microagents interacting at scale. The point is that Wikipedia is an emergent learning network, not a prescriptive learning system, and it would be a mistake to try to judge Wikipedia by any other criteria. It's a paradigm case of what may be called open source content, with mechanisms for validation and self-correction based on frequent interaction by microagents in an open system with negative constraints. It turns the commissioning structure of conventional encyclopedias on its head. Beyond prescriptive learning. In research conducted for the UK Higher Education Academy's Learning Observatory program, learning narratives were gathered to explore how students actually went about their learning. One of these narratives, the learning journey, illustrates the way in which emergent learning may arise, serendipitously, as it were, in the learning of someone enrolled for a prescriptive learning program. This narrative concerns the learning that takes place when April, a mature part-time student in an early years childhood education degree, goes on a visit to a preschool center of excellence and a related preschool. April is a preschool manager. On her visit to the center, she notices, "There were certain things that stuck in my mind about their environment that was completely different to my own. For instance, they have glass bottles, glass vases with flowers on the tables. And really, the fact that the children were so well behaved and quiet, made a big impression, thinking, how can I influence my children to be quieter?" April engages with several staff members at the school in the center, and becomes a member of an informal community of practice, COP. From her interaction within this COP, she gains enough confidence to embark on a complete change management program at her own preschool, despite the skepticism of her fellow teachers, incorporating ideas from her visit and from further interaction in this COP. April was only required to write up a report on her visit and some lessons learnt. However, her learning journey goes way beyond the requirements of her prescriptive learning program, particularly at a first-year level, in what might be called emergent learning. April engages in an unpredicted and far more complex task than was prescribed by her course. This learning was retrospectively coherent and influenced by her participation in an implicit and emergent community of practice. Although this community was small and several participants could probably see the whole picture, April's learning within it was not formally managed. April's case is one of entirely self-organized small-scale emergent learning, with little or no integration into formal, prescriptive learning or the curriculum. Assessment. Amplifying, celebrating, and recognizing this emergent learning was unlikely within the context of April's course. Romer argues that the traditional interpretation of assessment becomes problematic because an assessment of such a student according to the principles of the course will be incapable of capturing the student's creativity. Examples like this, which are becoming increasingly frequent as more mature students are invited back into higher education as part of the widening participation program in the UK, reflect the need for finding a workable way to integrate and move between the plurality of various communities, the multiple and disjointed individual trajectories, and the possibilities for amplifying, rather than just ignoring, emergent learning like this. The question is whether it is possible to bring such emergence back into a closed learning system and the institution's assessment framework. Dampening and amplifying emergence. As we have said above, emergence allows for new affordances, but these may be positive or negative. There are many uses of the term affordances, so it might be useful to define the particular sense in which we use it in this paper more precisely, before we continue. An affordance is the product of interactions between a person and their environment, each of which potentially alters their knowledge, competencies and identity, and potentially alters the microenvironment. And learning is the process of exploring, benchmarking and mastering new affordances. Redefining learning in terms of affordances in this way enables us to account for both prescriptive and emergent learning within an inclusive learning ecology, and it allows us to link learner, identity and context, as in Wenger's concept of social learning. This notion of affordances allows for potentially large adaptations by both learner and environment, but does not require it. In general terms, one would expect a lot of mutual adaptation in emergent learning, by definition. In prescriptive learning, on the other hand, one would expect much less adaptation on the part of the learner, and possibly none at all on the part of the, virtual or otherwise, learning environment. A learning program that requires students to explore a particular field, but in a way that encourages emergence, still has to be managed, albeit differently from the way learning is traditionally managed. Most important of all, negative constraints must be put in place and communicated to the participants. Secondly, the instructors or facilitators must dampen negative emergence and amplify positive emergence. The case that most clearly illustrates some of these issues is the University of Manitoba's massive open online course, CCK08, on Connectivism, designed by Downs and Siemens, which ran between September and December 2008. CCK08 was based on the Connectivist principles of connectivity, openness, diversity, and autonomy. The course content was available from the start on the course wiki, and participants were free to plan their own paths through this content, engaging at their own levels in media of their choice. Implicit in the course design was the expectation that information and expertise would be freely shared and knowledge would be created collaboratively. connectedness and interactivity lay at the heart of the course design. It was expected that knowledge would be emergent in the network and become a resource for the network as a whole. The course also provided an innovative blog aggregator, in which participants' blogs, and some forum discussions, were scanned on a daily basis, and leads and links to these postings were aggregated and captured in a daily electronic newsletter. This is an excellent example of how emergence can be harvested, enabled, and amplified by putting into practice weak signal detection of outlier events blogs, and communicating them to the whole network. See the section on managing emergence, above. The course was designed to be completely open and self-registering. This was in many ways a radical experiment which satisfied some of the key conditions for emergent learning, the interactions of multiple agents at a local level which can create or contribute to significant system-level change, different agents interacting and producing unanticipated outcomes. However, it did not, in practices, achieve a balance between constraint and degrees of freedom. The tolerance and lack of guidance on what to do about the very disruptive troll behavior from one participant in the first part of the course, who disrupted the work of course participants through aggressive behavior, and the total imposition of the power demonstration exercise near the end of the course, used too little and too much constraint respectively, and participation and emergent learning were compromised. Wikipedia defines a troll as someone who posts inflammatory, extraneous, or off-topic messages in an online community, such as an online discussion forum, chat room, or blog, with the primary intent of provoking other users into a desired emotional response or of otherwise disrupting normal on-topic discussion. One of the established ways of dealing with troll behavior is the Do Not Feed the Troll, DNFTT, protocol, that is, all participants ignore the troll's contributions, but this was not used in CCK08. The majority of the respondents in the Magnus et al. Research on CCK08 showed that they left the forums, some probably left the course, and many became bloggers exclusively, because they were refugees from the forums who wished to escape from an environment in which there were no apparent constraints. So connectedness per se does not ensure interaction, let alone emergent learning. As Siemens says, some months later, the question for me is not, how are people connected? But rather, what are the implications of people being connected in a certain way? Frequency of contact isn't that important to me. The challenge is to map out carefully, in detail, the most appropriate way for people to be connected, and to ask the question, can and should a course based on self-organization also be self-managed, or is there a crucial distinction to be made between self-organization and self-management in practice? Emergent curriculum. Courses can also be deliberately designed as adaptive systems, in which learning emerges. The MA in Management Learning and Leadership Program, MAMLL, course at Lancaster University in the UK is an example in which the curriculum itself is emergent, although still within the quality assurance framework for master's courses. This might have been more difficult in an undergraduate course. MAMLL subscribes to a belief in an open syllabus and self-managed learning. The curriculum is seen not as a description of content but as the product of the interaction between people who are active in the domain and the negotiating workshops and assignments, people who will produce resources for future students. We believe that individuals often know what they need to become more effective, and have a keen sense of their own priorities and interests. This is why we work with an open syllabus, where the content of the workshops, and the literature drawn upon, is shaped by both tutors and participants. In this sense, the course is an adaptive system which is not restricted to a predetermined representation of a student or domain, but allows students to be creative and engage in their own acts of representation, as advocated by Downs. This negotiated curriculum means that no two programs ever look quite the same. The program is a dynamic network for learning, continuously shaped and reshaped by its members. The outcomes can therefore be unpredictable and surprising. The course thus satisfies the overall criterion for emergent learning, a learning ecology in which agents and system co-evolve. The course has been running for 27 years as a part-time program. It takes a social constructionist approach to learning and has adopted and adapted some of the principles of the theories of communities of practices and network learning to encourage learners to take control over their own learning and follow their own lines of inquiry. In this sense, The course design promotes emergent learning. The program also promotes diversity by recruiting mature learners from all around the world and from all employment sectors. It provides a forum for face-to-face and online networking amongst participants, academics, researchers, practitioners, and alumni, thus enabling connections between people, ideas, and online and other resources. In terms of emergence, this emphasis is the specific factor of diversity, a factor which was also foregrounded in connectivism in CCK08. Whilst the program is informed by social learning theory, the emphasis has been on developing a network of learners rather than a community of practice, because the course leaders believe that COPs have the potential to be oppressive, exerting pressure towards conformity and crushing individual autonomy. Specifically, the course leaders believe that resistance to the core values of the community and its norms of behavior, or difference in terms of gender, role, age, and so on can result in marginalization and isolation, and that some students may not feel represented by the terms or expectations of a community. The MAMLL course supports the recognition and maintenance of difference and allows defiant speech and talking back. Differences and ambiguity are accepted without an expectation that they should somehow be resolved. This subtle difference from a community of practice approach is, in practices, positively significant for emergent learning, which is ensured by the existence of specific, limited constraints. Although the course emphasis is collaborative assessment, peer feedback, and students' contributions to the marking process, it is acknowledged that the power of assessment remains invested in the tutors and institution and that there are hierarchical differences between students and tutors. Whilst tutors recognize that academics are not necessarily authorities in a course where students can negotiate their curriculum, and that they can learn a lot from the negotiated curriculum and students, the course is not a free-for-all and tutors do not abdicate responsibility for their students' learning. We recognize that this process needs to be facilitated to be most effective. Tutors add new perspectives to the ideas participants already have, by sharing thoughts, concepts, models, etc., from their own research and practice, their academic interests and the literature. Emergent learning is therefore enabled in the MAMLL course by a fine balance between networks and communities of practice, to some extent constrained by the practices and regulations of the traditional education system. Self-organized inquiry-based learning. The CCK08 course was an experiment in emergent learning, based on the radically different Aferna dances of Web 2. So too is Mitra's Hole in the Wall, HIW, project, in which he tries to address the chronic failure that rural India has been plagued with in delivering quality education. He has built up a body of experiments to attempt to address this, starting with a computer embedded in a wall of a slum area of Kalkaji, New Delhi, to see what use the local children would make of it without instruction or guidance. A touchpad was built into the wall and a video camera placed on a nearby tree to record the children's activity. Mitra's research shows that many of the children achieved substantial learning on their own. This learning was clearly not prescribed but emergent. However, in some cases a lack of monitoring and intervention caused the experiments to fail. Aurora applauds Mitra's work, but also documents some of the failures that she encountered in her research on HIW projects in two communities in the Himalayas, in Almora, due to vandalism, and in Howalbagh, due to lack of finance and monitoring and support. In the light of these findings, Mitra has now added facilitators either locally or, most innovatively, by employing grandmothers, connected to learners via Skype internet phone calls, in what he calls the granny cloud. The facilitators are not subject experts. Their main role is to encourage and support the children's own learning. Aurora and Mitra have both recognized that for emergent learning to be effectively managed, it needs to be balanced with appropriate intervention and constraints. In one sense it is not remarkable that the children learn to use computers, as they learn to use mobile phones without any training. What is remarkable is how much they can learn, with how little guidance, if their self-motivation and self-organization is encouraged and enabled. For Mitra and Dingwall, the question is, can that self-motivation be sustained, and not veer off into computer games, as happened in some cases? Mitra has now set up a company, HIWell, which is working with schools, but he is determined to maintain effective self-organized learning, because the absence of a teacher can sometimes encourage children to explore more bravely than they would in their presence. This is, if anything, a more risky project, as reforming schools is notoriously difficult, particularly if you want to convince them of the value of the absence of teachers. As Aurora points out, the conundrum Highwell has to face is that it has to strategically engage with schools to justify its presence due to the absence of instruction, because it could be seen to imply that teachers should stay away to encourage children towards free learning. Mitra has built up a meticulous body of research to show maintained and even increased retention of knowledge by many of the children following his minimal interventionist approach. But, as Aurora points out, there is an inherent clash of cultures, of institutional discourses, between rural teaching embedded in rote learning and knowledge discovery and knowledge creation or emergent learning. Mitra's current definition of emergence: emergence occurs when a system starts to do things that it was never designed for, may confuse and unsettle teachers even more. There is no doubt that Mitra's project is breaking new ground in at least three quite distinct areas: self-organized learning, cloud-based facilitation, and rural education. The strategic questions about how to find a point of engagement for this emergent learning with the Indian education system, however, seems to have a long way to go. Conclusion. In this paper, we have described the unprecedented affordances that Web2 offers for interaction and communication and for emergent learning, as well as some of the substantial challenges in realizing this potential in education. We have mapped out the characteristics of emergent learning and situated it within learning as a whole, distinguishing it from more traditional modes of learning in order to provide the basis for integrating both of these two modes of learning within an overall learning ecology. To do this, we have drawn on complexity theory, communities of practice, and connectivism, and analyzed cases that illustrate some of the key issues. In the process, we hope to have provided some foundations for a framework for emergent learning as well as for a more inclusive, flexible, and adaptable learning ecology. Such a framework would be based first on the technical or infrastructural conditions for emergent learning. ICT is fast morphing into the social software of Web2, and the augmented reality of cloud-based Web3. ICT has changed beyond recognition, providing global open access at extremely low cost, for not only consuming, producing, and distributing texts and artifacts, but for interaction, communication, and networking. Secondly, emergence requires new institutional and social norms and structures. Some innovative legal frameworks which are already in place provide clear protocols and resources for collaboration and sharing, notably, open source licenses for collaborative software and Creative Commons licenses for collaborative and shared content. Many free, mostly advertising-driven, platforms are also in place, from Google to a range of social software and cloud-based apps downloadable applications. And thirdly, there is a need for a shift from a monolithic learning environment in which everything must be controlled and predictable, to a more pluralistic learning ecology in which both prescriptive and emergent application domains and modes of learning have their place, and in which it is possible to celebrate the unpredictable. This requires quite a different mindset, in which there is a role for safe fail as well as fail-safe management, a role for resilience as well as robustness, and a balance between prospective and retrospective sense-making of teaching and learning. Institutional change is also at issue. The debate between Mitra and Aurora highlights the difficulties in convincing teachers to change. Curriculum change, and particularly radical curriculum change, is difficult, precisely because it challenges embedded practices, embedded pedagogically, culturally, and socially. The question for proponents of emergent learning and Web2 is whether this just triggers a romance which tells of learning free from the restrictions of formal schooling and children liberated through self-learning, or whether a new two-state learning ecology can be achieved, in theory and in practices. The degree to which the learning can usefully be based on self-motivation and self-organization depends on three things: the quality of the interaction afforded by the resource and the facilitator, the range of affordances for open interaction with other peers, or micro-agents, and the moderation of the balance between openness and constraints. This is true whether the learning takes place in the hole-in-the-wall kiosk linked to a granny cloud, an open learning network, or within moderated peer learning in an online course in higher education. There are a number of approaches to learning that are premised on a mix of self-interest, internal motivation, self-organization, and peer interaction, from Montessori classrooms to inquiry and problem-based learning, to negotiated curricula and a range of online and open learning programs. It is fairly obvious that any learning model, and particularly inquiry-based ones, would benefit from more interaction and access to information. The point about what Mitra initially called minimally invasive education and is now calling self-organized learning environments, SOLEs, is not that emergent learning networks should replace or displace prescriptive learning or teachers, or that inquiry benefits from access to better resources, but rather that space needs to be made for substantial, self-motivated, self-organized, emergent learning, per se. This should be recognized as a vital, not a peripheral, part of a learning ecology that includes both emergent and prescriptive learning, in a world in which Web 2 platforms offer unprecedented affordances for information, interaction, networking, and collaboration, as well as unique challenges. This is the end of the article, Emergent Learning and Learning Ecologies in Web 2.0. The text format is available on the Aerodl website www.aerodl.org. Goodbye.